make sure that they have that particular skill set. Other times you need somebody who's a little bit more broad or adaptable. In general, what I look for in a candidate is somebody who is thoughtful and can synthesize data and think on their feet a little bit.
As an employer, your business depends on your staff. They are the backbone of your company. But because you face unique challenges managing your team, you need to have the right resources. On this podcast, industry expert Alex Atwood tackles it all so you don't have to.
I'm super excited to be talking to software executive, entrepreneur, and marketing guru Rich Mendes. Rich co-founded and exited two software startups, one to SAP and the other to Tibco. He's now working on a new marketing platform to help small businesses by consolidating all of their tools that they need for marketing and KPI measurement all in one place. I've had the pleasure of getting to know Rich as he served on the board of my company, and he's also been a friend since college. His strategy has been invaluable to the growth of my business, and I'm excited to hear more about his experiences and wisdom. When you first launched, what was the name of the company? Clear Presence? Clear Standards.
Clear Standards, yeah. Oh boy, how old was I? I was probably around my mid to late 30s, I guess.
Mid-30s. Got it. I mean, that's pretty young to form a company and get it exited. So how did it feel at that point? Did you feel like you had sort of gotten to the pinnacle, or did you feel like there was more? Where were you?
I mean, it certainly wasn't like we weren't, you know, building a Facebook or anything like that.
Right.
I think we remained pretty humble throughout that process. But it was certainly nice to have gone through kind of the full life cycle of starting something from scratch, raising, going through multiple rounds of funding, and then having an exit. I think And people tend to focus on the glamorous aspect, but as you know, you've been in startup mode before. It's not easy. Startups sometimes are about how many hits can you take and fall down and keep getting up.
Right? Oh, yeah. So what did you do after that exit happened?
We were at the company, SAP, for a couple of years, and then we left and started another startup called AnyPresence. We did that for, I think, about 3 or 4 years. I can't remember now exactly how long, but, and then we ultimately ended up selling that to Tibco. And that was a different experience. We pivoted. We did a bigger pivot in that one. We were sort of forced to. It was not an ideal pivot. And, you know, there was other confluence of factors where it perhaps wasn't as successful as we'd hoped it would be, but we found a nice home for the company there as well. So really can't complain.
Yeah, well, that's pretty impressive, right? So you go from a startup in your mid-30s, sold it after 18 months, and then you started to get the itch again that, hey, there's something in that creative sort of something inside that makes you want to build something, yeah? Is that what happened?
Exactly. And I think having good co-founders that you can rely on and trust is important. If they're not co-founders, then advisors or whomever. In our case, we're fortunate. There's three of us, AC and Rakesh, and then and myself, and we had enough trust that we were able to do a lot of these things and take risks because we'd rely on each other for things. And so that's another aspect of, I think, leadership and startups is that you got to learn who to rely on, right? And it's not trying to go on it alone, right?
Yeah. So having the right team of collaborators is key. People that you can trust, people that you respect, and everybody has their own, sort of takes their own lane and moves with it.
Exactly.
So let's get into managing teams and how you did that successfully. So what did you learn from your first experience managing your teams that perhaps made it easier to manage and hire new teams in your next startup? Or was it even easier the second time around once you had done it?
It's always different, right? It's never the same, I would say. And so I think there's the same challenges of finding the right people. When you're in a startup, it's a much smaller team, right? Mm-hmm. And each contributor is really key. When you exited to a large company and you're typically, if you're an executive in a startup, you may be in charge of a larger team, which is what in both cases, it's sort of the dynamic changes and you have to hire people that are more specialized, right? I think that's really the biggest thing in a startup is you hire people that can wear multiple hats, not just do one thing. Whereas in a larger company with larger teams, you really need specialists that can do one thing really well. That's probably the biggest difference.
Ah, got it. So did you find that collaborating within these sort of different, with these different cohorts in either one of the startups and specifically collaborating and fostering relationships within groups that don't necessarily report to you, So how did you take that on? How were you efficiently doing that, allowing people to become, to be productive, collaboration, actually co-elevating with those that aren't necessarily within your particular cohort or that particularly report to you?
The concept of collaboration is interesting because it's within a startup, collaboration is a given. You have to be able to almost shed whatever organization you're in, and really you're just all pulling together, right, for the sake of the startup. In terms of when you're in a larger company, the collaboration is more what you would probably consider traditional, kind of you have to cut across large organizational boundaries and build interpersonal relationships to get something done. And it comes down to incentives. In a startup, generally speaking, everyone's incented to do almost exactly the same thing, which is achieve a higher value for that startup, right? A higher valuation for that startup through sales or more customers or whatever it is. When you're in a large organization, it's a little less aligned in the sense that, sure, at the end of the day, everyone's trying to help the company generate revenue. But in a larger company, there are a lot more sub goals and objectives that you have to sort of make sure that your particular goal in a larger company is aligned with somebody else's if you want to get their collaboration, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So there's more politics is basically what you're saying.
There's more politics. If politics is basically a description for, hey, how do I align? If I need somebody's help, I need to make sure that the help he's giving me is sort of aligned with something that that person wants, right? It's more obvious in a startup that if we're both working on the same goal and therefore there's less friction,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it sounds like lobbying. The first example sounds like lobbying, right? That's pretty much the definition of lobbying.
Right.
And the second sounds like just actual true collaboration. It sounds like more like co-elevation. In other words, you're elevating the business, you're elevating the mission, whatever that is, and you're doing it in a collaborative way, right?
Exactly. And the political example is a good one, right? When you're running a race for a local government position, everyone in your race is pulling towards the same goal. When you make it to that office, and now you have to compromise and work with other people to achieve past legislation, it becomes a different type of collaboration.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So are we saying that startups get things done more efficiently, maybe, than the larger organizations that require lobbying and politics and all sorts of different tactics?
I think it's a different challenge. It really is probably close to, and I'm not from the political arena, but running a race for governor is different than when you are a governor and you're trying to get legislation passed.
Right.
I would imagine it's something like that.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've never heard it. I've never heard it put that way. What's your leadership style? So, well, first of all, that's a two-part question. So A, what's your leadership style? And B, how has it evolved as you began in your career, maybe prior to launching your first business, in your first business, what you learned from there? So kind of go through that with me, how your leadership style has evolved.
I think early on in my career, a lot of it is personality driven, right? So I'm a pretty hands-on person in terms of doing work. And so I would say early on in my career, I was more of I would sort of be in the details with my team. And I felt that, I still feel that sort of leading by example is the best way to lead. I wouldn't ask anything of anyone in my team that I wouldn't be willing to do myself, right? In some cases, as you get to larger teams, you may not be capable of doing that task yourself, but the point still remains that it's something you'd roll up your sleeves and be willing to do. And therefore, people will respect a leader who they know would do it, and they would therefore gladly go do it for them, right? Mm-hmm. I think as I've gotten better at kind of figuring out how to delegate and be more hands-off, as I've gotten more experience, and part of that is just because the teams I've managed have been larger and you can't really micromanage everybody down at a small level. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'd say in general, I've been fortunate enough to have good second-level managers that don't need a lot of micromanagement. Mm-hmm. So giving people intent and letting them achieve that intent however they want is sort of my preferred management style.
Yeah. So giving a good amount of autonomy.
Yep.
That's right. Do you have any particular mantra when you hire somebody new onto the team? There may be a difference between for your own company or for maybe a larger organization that you are in a leadership role with. Are there any sort of go-tos that you kind of fall back on when you're looking to make a hire or bring someone onto your team?
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on the role that you're hiring for. I think if sometimes you need a specialist with a certain skill set, that you have to go make sure that they have that particular skill set. Other times you need somebody who's a little bit more broad or adaptable. In general, what I look for in a candidate is somebody who is thoughtful and can synthesize data and think on their feet a little bit. And so I would typically ask questions in an interview like, can you describe one of your biggest challenges in the past year at this job and how you dealt with it? I'm always curious to hear how people deal with things that come up, right, that pose a challenge, as opposed to just whether they're good at the process of doing their job.
Ah, I like that. So make them think a little bit more about this and contextualize it and actually bring it into their world, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
In an ideal world, there's never any kind of challenge to your job because you're doing exactly what you're expected and things are working exactly as you expect them to, right?
Yep.
But that's not how the world works. And so you want to be able to gauge for any given candidate how they deal with a difficult situation, a challenge that they don't expect, or it was unexpected, or something that's basically, how do they get around a hurdle that's preventing them from doing their job?
Yeah, got it. And be able to articulate that and how they would solve it. Makes a ton of sense. So let's switch over to another question. So you're somebody who's been in marketing for a long, long time, whether it's been with your own business or whether it's been with other businesses, large and small organizations, specifically around small business. Marketing tends to be a challenge, especially these days. There's so many different types of ways to market. There's so many different channels. There's just so many tools, just specifically tools. If you're talking about CRM, you're talking about social media, you're talking about, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. What would you say are the key things that a small business person needs to focus on when they don't have, let's say, somebody on their marketing? Maybe it's just them and their co-founder. What would you say to either a startup founder or somebody who's just opening their small business? What should they focus on now in terms of marketing?
The first step in marketing is to truly understand your customer. If you truly understand your customer in terms of what are their pain points, what's their buying decision-making process, what are they looking for, right? Then everything else will flow from there. You're looking for the ideal product market fit. So if you understand the buyer's pain point, then you're better able to position what you're selling to them to meet that, to solve that pain point. From there, it's all details. Whether you're messaging on Facebook or Twitter, whether you're doing a webinar or speaking at an event, those are all experiments to see which channel happens to work best for your product market fit, which yields the best results. And so I think it's important, as marketers get bombarded with all this technology and channels and things like that, to not lose sight of that important element, which is really understanding at the end of the day, what is it that your customers need and how does what you're selling meet that need?
Yes. So it comes down to the fundamentals.
That's right. Yeah. And that, I think one of the things we have to remember is, as complex as marketing may seem sometimes, it's always been like this, right? There was, before the radio, there was newspapers. And then after that, there's radio. And then there's TV. And then there is the internet. And so everything sort of evolves on a continuous basis. It's not, it's really more of the same, but the core thing hasn't changed. In fact, in many ways, you could argue that it has become easier or less expensive to market than before. There are lots of stories about great companies that build great brands without spending on traditional media, like running a television ad. Mm-hmm. And so while that wasn't really possible before, it is today. And so the question is, how can you take advantage of those new media opportunities to communicate your particular product and how it meets the needs of your customers at a lower cost than ever before?
Yeah, well, one thing is clear, is that understanding your customer, understanding that product market fit, no matter what industry, no matter what business you're in, it's vital that you learn that. And that's going to, as you said, is going to open up the path to how to best communicate and articulate your value prop to that customer. So that makes a ton of sense. So what are you up to now?
Well, you mentioned, you know, I'm working on this solution to help small businesses essentially kind of manage their marketing tactics and activities and get recommendations and things in one place. Because to your point, a lot of small businesses are not marketing savvy or don't have a full-time marketer. And so they may need some guidance or planning or organization. And that's a solution that I'm working on with some other founders to try and bring to market.
Very, very interesting. So this is specifically built for the small business, the small to medium-sized business? What type of...
Yeah, it's something that a business of any size could certainly use. But I think businesses that do not have a dedicated, experienced marketing leader could benefit from. Hmm. And a lot of times, those businesses typically outsource or contract, subcontract to marketing help. And so part of the solution will be to help you find contractors, perhaps, who can help you and utilize the platform to kind of manage all the tasks related to leveraging a contractor to get things done.
Ah, very cool. What's the name of the product? And can anybody listening or watching take a demo of it or learn more?
Yeah, you can. We have a beta up of it. The product is called MarketRise. MarketRise.com. Mm-hmm. And it's in beta mode now. So if you don't mind being a little bit of a guinea pig to test it out, you're welcome to go sign up at MarketRise.com and start to play with an early version.
That sounds very cool. Everyone loves being the first one in something, in a new technology, a new platform, something's going to make their life easier. So that sounds super exciting. It's your third time. Third time's a charm. I'm sure this is going to be a massive hit. It's going to be the biggest hit you've had thus far.
As a marketer, it's something I've always would have loved to have had when I've been doing marketing. And so if we can build it to that vision where it's helpful to marketers, then hopefully everything else will follow.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that product, and I'm sure it's going to make a huge impact for small businesses that are struggling right now to keep organized and keep all of their priorities straight. So that sounds great. And I hear it also tracks KPIs, which is key because you want data-driven analytics, right?
The next release will have KPIs and goal tracking.
Nice.
Initially, you can enter that manually, but eventually we'll automatically gather some of those data points from places like your website and Facebook and other channels that you may be using.
Awesome. Very, very cool. All right. Well, here's the last thing we do in these interviews. There's something called What's Your Word? So this is going to be a random, it's backwards here, but hopefully you can see it. And I'm just going to grab a random card here. Oh, and here's the question. I don't know if you can see, maybe people watching can see it. I'll read it. I don't think it's going to work. All right. So the question is, what makes you lose track of time?
What makes me lose track of time?
Yeah.
At work, it's something that, well, either at work or not, I guess, something that truly fascinates me or interests me. And I just get into it, right? Whether it's a great movie, a great book, doing something with my kids, whatever. That kind of lets me lose track of time in the best way.
Yeah, I got it. So maybe you scroll onto an article of something that just sounds kind of interesting and out of this world, and you may lose track of time. I do the same thing. I'll hear about something, and then I'll chase it down a hole. I've never heard of that before, and then I'll look it up on Wikipedia. I'll look at it, and the next thing you know, I'm an armchair expert.
I've heard many people say, right, there's kind of two types of people in this world, the regular kind and people that are constantly amazed at things.
Yeah, well, if you're not constantly amazed at things, then you're probably not living a life that has the right amount of excitement in it, because there's just so much. I mean, if you just think about this, if you think about from just the last 20 years, the things that we just have access to today in our pockets, that now we don't really take on how much of an impact this is. To go to our college selves and look at what we have today is pretty remarkable. So taking a step back and just appreciating that and becoming a fan of these things is awesome. So thank you so much for your time today, Rich. This was very informative, very helpful. There's some hacks that you gave us here for some small business owners. We're looking forward to seeing much success at MarketRise. I hope that any small business owners, anyone working in a marketing department, takes a look at MarketRise. That's MarketRise.com. This is Rich Mendes. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. And we look forward to the continued success.
Thanks, Alex. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Thank you for tuning in to Off the Clock. Don't miss next week's tips around innovation and HR. Subscribe to the show. You can catch us on YouTube, Apple, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, be kind and thrive.